Today's Perek in Tanakh is Melachim Aleph, Perek Yud Zayin. We have watched now from this past Prakim a rather fascinating and painful breakdown in the nature of Melachim. And what we discovered was the purpose of the book, or the nature of the book so far. It seems clear that the things that we would have thought were important historically are looked at as being unimportant, and we're referred to historical documents in Divrei HaYamim, where the word Divrei HaYamim means history. So Melachim is not meant to be the history. It's meant to pick certain, what to the people at the time may have appeared very minor issues, and to use them to point to the gradual changes that are occurring in the nature of Malchut, so that we can understand the waxing of the moon in the same way that we understand the waning of the moon, so that when we deconstruct Malchut, we actually come to better understand the construction of Malchut, which is a very modern approach to understanding things. So the deconstruction is just important to us in the David Melech Yisrael Chai V'Kayam, or looking at this as the moon, the equivalent of the moon, and that being so central to our understanding of Malchut, is remember, if there's anywhere that we need, and that you would expect to find in the Torah, an analysis of the way that things fit together, the ultimate construct, by definition, is Malchut. In a sense, it's a construct which is completely constructed, because it does not have any direct one-to-one correlation in terms of what it is with any particular physical object. So it's completely a construct, which is why it's so similar to Minut, in which the whole thing is just a self-organized bubble. It doesn't have any really external reality, which is why it's so easy, almost instantaneously, to take someone, this is throughout history it's like, to take someone who is untouchable, magic, and then suddenly reduce him to off with your head. It can occur overnight, as Napoleon pointed out. You know, the line between the sublime and the insane is very, very thin. You know, and that's the point. You know, well, yesterday you were an emperor, today you're a nut. So, you know, we'll put you into the nut house. And that's exactly why the understanding of waxing and waning is so central to us, because of the subtleties of the interconnections. Our being able to understand what Malchut is built of, that's the whole Sefer of Rut, as we saw, the question of making certain that we don't use mechanics in building a Malchut, which was so central to Sefer Shmuel. And here in Melachim, as we would in any modern context of a construct, we would attempt to deconstruct it. And in that deconstruction, we tease apart the various elements that were so fundamental in building the construct, that if there would be anywhere that we would want to find where the Torah would be teaching us what the elements of Malchut are, this would be where to look. And therefore, this is where the Nevi'im concentrated their effort, not on teaching history at all, but in teaching Melachim. Now, what happened was is that we understood the breakdown in the nature of Malchut from Yeravam, that was a legitimate Malchut, into the Listiut that followed, as being elements of the breakdown of the interconnection of pieces because of the fact that there was self-interest that was involved. We took a look at the nature of that self-interest, and we worked out the various levels at which different things would stand in place of what ought to be in real Malchut. But we arrived at a very important watershed yesterday. And we mentioned that Chazal point out that Omri's Beit Melucha, and he was the only one that was a melech for over a period of generations, three generations, which means that it was a completely artificial construct in terms of its being listiut. The Navi did not support and did not announce that there would be a Malchut of Omri. It was what appeared to be nothing but Memshala initially, just an ability to work it out in his fighting with his other generals and getting, over a period of 5 years, finally getting to a point in which he could really view himself as Melech, that Chazal identified the one piece of information that we know about him in Melachim, which is the fact that he bought Shomron and built Shomron. But that is considered to be now the centerpiece of the idea of Omri's Beit Melucha, זאת שושלת עומרי, זאת דיינסטי, מפני שהוסיף עיר, בנה עיר בארץ ישראל, and that directly related to Ahav, his son, Ahav becomes now an international figure. It's not the little guy that we've been talking about until now, Barnea, the historical...
In the city of Kirch in the far east of Turkey today, they found a monolith. It's called the Kirch Monolith, and it describes the history of Shalmaneser III, who reigned from 858 to 824. This is the first years of his kingdom. And he describes in there how he went from Nineveh, crossed the Tigris, crossed the Euphrates on inflated goatskins, and fought a coalition of 12 kings who all came together to fight him at Karkar. The main king was the king of Hamat, which is in northern Syria. And one of those kings mentioned is Ahav. And the normal reading has an incredible statement of Ahav of Israel bringing 2,000 chariots and 10,000 soldiers. And that's very well quoted in all types of books. Later, everybody who's the northern king is from the house of Omri, is related to Omri. Some say, no, it was only 100, 200 chariots, but he's mentioned as part of a coalition of kings.
Thank you. Ahav himself in Chazal makes reference to the fact that he is an international figure. So again, it's unimportant to us in terms of the history here to understand Ahav, but it's good for us to have the background. He is convinced that he's got a secret. He's so convinced that he has a secret that at the end of the last parak, we saw that the rebuilding of Yericho was viewed as part of Ahav. B'yamav bana chiel beit ha'eliyat Yericho. Not really Yericho. We saw Chazal point out, actually, the Medrash points out that the hey Yericho means it's not the original Yericho, it's another city that was called Yericho, but that's the same thing. That was all included in the Yehoshua curse. What that has to do with Ahav of Beit Omri and so on isn't clear, although it's obvious when you think about it, there must be some connection between the ear. So what happens here, and we're about to begin a completely different flavor in the book, and that's why it's very important to have this introduction. The continuation of the book of Malachim suddenly switches to stories, weird stories, of Nevi'im and miracles and situations out on the street which seem to have nothing to do with the nature of Malchut. They're very strange stories that almost seem to come from out of nowhere. They pop in as total non sequiturs, and we need to understand what is happening if our understanding of the nature of the book is going to hold water. What happens here with Omri is very, very special, because what he did was he created a malchut that was based on Eretz Yisrael. And that's why he called Shomron after Shemer. The relationship of Chiyo Beit Ha'eli, rebuilding Yericho, is simply an attack on the magical Knisa La'aretz, which was the myth, so to speak, of the times. It was to take away the religious element of the Malchut and build it into a nationalistic Malchut that's built around the wonders of the land, the commitment to the land, very similar to modern Zionism. So that what happened was that this is now a Malchut that uses all of the old words, and that was the basis of Yeravam's initial insight, except that Yeravam made it a religious alternative. Here, we're past the stage. Once we get to Omri, we're past the stage of the horrors of the Avodah Zarah issues and so on. You can't get any worse. Okay, we've already done that. We've put an Avodah Zarah in every telem. We've put plaques everywhere. We don't believe in God, and so on and so forth. So this is no longer a powerful alternative. It's like the Potavizhirov once said about Shabbos in South Africa. When somebody after davening on Shabbos pulls up with his car and says, can I give the Rav a ride? So he said, his comment was, there is no Chilul Shabbos in Africa at all. There's complete bittul of Shabbos. It's simply not an issue. Because it's Chilul Shabbos, it doesn't exist. I mean, people have no idea there's something wrong with offering the Rav a ride. I understand. It doesn't. Shabbos doesn't exist. This is the point that we're at. Basically, what's happened is that's not an issue. He's saying, Avodah Zarah is no longer an issue. So powerfully does he state that Avodah Zarah is not an issue that it becomes the trigger for this parak, as we'll see in a moment. But getting back to the nature of the Malchut, so what is the issue? He takes the ideas of Yeravam, strips them of their religious strips them of their religious impetus and direction, and instead attempts now to create a Malchut that is based on the nation's love of the land. And that love of the land now becomes the secret of Omri's Shoshalta de Omri, and the rebuilding of Yericho. And that's the stubbornness of it. The stubbornness of it is we don't believe in myths. So if his oldest son dies, these things happen. Oops, exactly. If his second son dies, we're going to all of a sudden buy into magical thinking because coincidence happens. It's weird and it's crazy, but you're not going to catch me becoming some kind of weird religious nut who believes that there's some old curse here. And I'm not going to buy the house because it's a haunted house. Right. Thank you very much. It's cheaper. I buy. Okay, that's the idea. So much is this the idea that the next pasuk is triggered by the story of Chiyo Beit HaEli. We suddenly begin in today's parak 17 in Melachim with the appearance of someone that we never heard of before, who now comes on the scene and is talking to Achav. And how in the world is talking to Achav? Vayomer Leo Hatishpi Mitoshavei Gilad. Who is Leo Hatishpi? What is that Tishpi? A land that's called Toshav. And he is a Toshav of Gilad. What is that? Whoever this guy is, he's suddenly talking to the king. And he tells the king out of the blue, Chai Adonai Elohi Yisrael Asher Amarti Lefanav. I swear by God who I have been standing in front of. We're standing in front of. Whoever heard of you? What do you mean standing in front of? You don't even have a smicha. What is this? Im yiyah hashanim ha'ela talomatar ki im lefi devari. There will be no rain, there will be no dew, except on my say-so. What in the world does this have to do with Sefer Melachim? And this goes from this point on and on and on. Half of the book between Melachim Aleph and Beit is dedicated to weird stories about Nevi'im and Elio and Elisha and other groups of Nevi'im. What is going on over here? So first of all, the smichut to the previous story of Chiyo Beit HaEli is, according to Chazal, exactly the trigger of this event. Kadosh Baruch Hu comes to Elio, who, by the way, and this is the makor of the modern Hebrew word tiron. A tiron in the army is taken from the Gemara Yerushalmi, who says, Elio atishbi? This guy is a tiron. He's just starting to be a Navi. What does he mean when he says, Asher amarti lefanav? Nobody ever heard of him. So that tiron shebenevim, as the Gemara puts it, how did he suddenly appear here? He's just taking his basic training.
Training a novice or a
private. I mean, he's just coming into his thing, right? So Elio is Tiron Leneviim. He was like a trainer. Training. Very nice. He's a trainee. So clearly, says the Yerushalmi, his years of Shimush to Achia Hashiloni, and this is the Makor of the din that Elio's Makaba from Achia Hashiloni, which is how Achia Hashiloni takes all the way from Amram that he had learned from and brings it up, and therefore all of those doors in between are viewed as one Kabbalah. And then from Elio Navi, that's it. We don't need any more Kabbalah because he never dies. This, of course, is the movement between the lines, the movement of Melachim to the idea of the rebuilding of the moon. Because here is where now we're touching on the issue of the relationship of Eliyahu to Pinchas, as we'll see, to the promise of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as the Targum puts it, Briti Shalom, is that he will be the Mevaser of the rebuilding of Malchut Beit David. And here we're analyzing the breakdown of the Malchut Beit David. So of course he's important in understanding that breakdown. He is suddenly told by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, poor Chiel, he's sitting Shiva for his seventh son, and the man is a great man, and the king is visiting him to be Menachem Avelin. You should be Menachem Avelin too. Okay, so Eliyahu walks into the house to be Menachem Avel. He says, be Menachem Avel. So Achav is there. So he says, Baruch Hashem, that is Mekayim, the words of the Nevi'im and of the Melachim, because this is exactly what Yehoshua said would happen, and this is what happened. So I think we should all be thankful that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Megala the Din on you, and this is, you know, it's a great opportunity to accept the fact that this happened. Achav turns to him and said, another one of these religious nuts. Let me ask you something. Who is bigger, Moses or Joshua? He says, Moses. Well, says Achav, last time I read in the Torah, it says, Yishomru lechem, I mean, pen yiftelem avchem, esartem, avatem, v'loyim achirim, or what's going to be, and then v'loyim atar, and it's supposedly it shouldn't be raining. I mean, I have been worshiping every Avodah Zorah in the world, and it rains like crazy. The economy's doing great. I'm an internationally recognized king. What happened to the curse of Moses? I mean, come on. You're telling me that this has something to do with Joshua. And right there in the holy books, it says there's not going to be any rain. You look out the window? To which Eliyahu replies, Chai Hashem Elokei Yisrael, now there won't be rain. You are ready to admit that you've worshipped every other fine, so there won't be rain, okay? You want the klal of Moshe? Let's have the klal of Moshe. Great. So in the same way, that's unimportant. Believe me, if that's unimportant, then what Moshe says has no relevance to the day-to-day weather report, some crazy old curse of Yehoshua on Yericho has nothing to do with the death of the children of Chiel. That I can promise you. So here we get the conversation. Now, somehow or other, at this point, Eliyahu becomes the foil for Achav's approach. So that means that what we're really doing is we are separating out, and in terms of deconstructing the Malchus, this is so valuable. What we're doing is we are separating out the religious content from the Malchus and asking what exactly would characterize a Malchus Yisrael, which is meant to be Malchus Shemayim. We said there were three Me'isot. One is Ein Lanu Chelek B'Ben Yishai, and the other one is Ein Lanu Chelek B'David. What are those two issues? What represents the part of Malchus Shemayim? How does it tie into the development of Malchus? Why can't we simply create a Malchus that is based on exactly the same issues of interrelationships and emergence and ideas, and substitute other ideas for religious ideas? So suddenly, the book keeps contrasting the moral content of things with the political content of things. And in order to do this, we switch away from the Malchut into the street. And we switch from the interrelationships between moral elements to the direct perception of what exactly is meant to happen from the moral point of view in the presence of this type of political structure. In order to do that, we have stories of Nevi'im that are dealing with individuals, and on the other hand, the Malchut, which is building its Malchut. So in the same way that we saw that Chiel Beit Ha'Eli is seen as functioning as a member of Achav's politics, even though it may be that he was, as the Medrash says, He was interested in profit. He wasn't making a statement, but it was part of an overall statement that politically was the way people think, exactly what today. When people utilize liberal philosophy in order to invest in something, it's not that they're making a liberal statement, it's that the liberal aspect of it is given. When I want to make a movie theater on the Harabayit, the liberal element is given. I'm not making a statement. I want to make money. But I only am able to make money by building a movie theater in the Beit HaMikdash because I buy into the entire story of how we view history. So, you know, it used to be a religious place. Our religion today is film and theater and so on. So why not make it a film place? It's great. So put the Cinematheque in Gay Ben Hinnom, you know. That used to be hell. Now hell is a bad movie. It's extremely contemporary. It's okay.
It's a synagogue of performing arts in LA.
There you go. Okay. The synagogue of the performing arts. Excellent. All right. So Eliyahu now gives him what appears to be a personal curse. Now we're going to see whether this is one of the way that Chazal viewed the behavior of Eliyahu as being similar to the behavior of Pinchas, and we'll see that he himself identifies himself as a Kana'i, which the only one that we have is actually the story of Pinchas. So we don't even know who Eliyahu is. I mean, there's a whole machloket with Eliyahu from him, a machloket among the Chachomim. Is he from Bnei Binyamin? In Divrei Hayamim, it's Mashmah, he's from Binyamin. So we call his the word Eliyah appears among the Binyamin in Divrei Hayamim. There's some who tainas that Gilad, he must have been from Gilad, if it says Mitoshve Gilad. So then maybe he was from Gad, because we view that as being on the border, and that's considered to be Gad, because by Gad it says, Agvul was Yazer v'cholorei Gilad. So if we're stressing Gilad, it must be that he was right there on the borders. Maybe he comes from God. Okay, one time, this is an interesting medrash, one time they're arguing about it, and Eliyahu walks into the Beit HaMidrash and says, gentlemen, gentlemen, what are we arguing about me? I am Ibnei Banea Shal Rachel. So I come from Binyamin. Fine. Okay, there's other, well, this is a person that, as we often find in history, has multiple identities. We view him as the same person, as if to say the ideas of Gil, the Gilgul Neshamot, or a person who never dies, and which we find many, many people we've spoken about, Sarah Bat Asher is like this, and other personalities that keep reappearing over here. So again, whether it means literally the same protoplasm, or it means the same information, you know, that we've been able to preserve and stuck into other protoplasm, is really irrelevant, because we understand today that all of that is just a matrix for information. It doesn't really matter. So getting now to this curse of his, it's not clear whether this is something that he just said because he was shaken by the words of Akav and wanted to show that, no, it still is relevant, or whether he was indeed given l'chatchila the rights by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to do this. Now, as the Gemara points out in Ta'anit, I mean, the Maftechot, three maftechot were not given to humans. One of them is the mafteach of Gishamim. The other, of course, is the mafteach of Tchiyat Hamitim, which is going to become coming right up. And the other is the mafteach of a woman to give birth. And we'll see about that later. So, in any event, these three maftechot somehow have something to do with the story. And he is able to give this kola. It is not going to. Hashem comes to him and tells him, "Vayidvar Adonai elav lemor, lech mize, upanita lecha kedma, v'nistarta benachal kirit asher al pnei hayarden." You got to get out of here. Get away from Achav and Izebel. And I want you to go east to Nachal Kirit Parnea.
It's two opinions. One is Wadi Kelp
that
comes down to the Nifo, and the other is a Nachal on the other side of the Jordan.
We're going to see that ultimately he goes much further north. Right. Yes. You will drink from the nachal. But what will you eat? I have commanded the Orvim. Now, great woman, the Orvim is the name of a town. We said Orev, Vzev. Remember Orev? So people from the town of Orev, who are called Orvim, will be taking care of you. However, we know the other remez is Orvim Mamash. And we learn all types of halachas from here. The Gemara says in Chulin, the crows would grab food from the kitchens of Achav, so that Achav was actually supporting Eliyahu without quite realizing it, which leads us into the question of how was Achav's food kosher? Mm-hmm. Which the Gemara Chulin goes into now at great length. What would make Achav's food kosher? If Achav indeed believes the way he does that Avodah Zarah is irrelevant, then all of his people should have a din of not being kosher for Shechita, not being kosher for any Eidus. And so now it turns out in the end that there's a whole subculture right under Achav's nose of big tzaddikim. The question is, maybe there was a mashgiach who was a member of that group on the kitchen. The Gemara goes through all of those possibilities. And we'll see about them later at the time of Yehoshaphat. But in any event, these Orvim go way, way back into history. Because we find that at the time of Tevat Noach, where the Orev refused to go out and said, you know, you hate me, and the master of the universe hates me, and this is ridiculous. I mean, there were only two of us. You're risking. I mean, there are other species where you got seven individuals. You risk one of them. And they risk us so that if one of us dies, that's the end of the species. We're extinct. Absolutely. Exactly. Nevermore. There you go. Beautiful. Beautiful. Thank you. That's great. Beautiful. Beautiful. Quoth the raven. Excellent. And Noach says, yeah, well, what good are you? Basically, all you do is cause problems. I mean, you're not kosher. We can't eat you. Can't bring you as a carbon. What the heck? Go extinct. Says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this Orev is going to be very necessary. Ad Yaboshet Hamayim, as it says. He went back and forth until the times at which the water dried up. When did the water dry up? In the days of Eliyahu. So these Orvim are the Orvim that came back. Now we're justifying the mice of Briat Olam and the Orvim in terms of, obviously, if it's in that context, it really is in terms of ultimate Geula becomes part of the whole question of the Yonim versus the Orvim, which ends up being the issues of Yisrael versus Rome. The mixture, as the Gemara in Chulin points out, there are Yonim, there are Orvim that look like Yonim, or Orvim that lead the Yonim, all types of weird remuzim about the interrelationship of, or lo lechinam halach, that's the idea, can you make up your moral judgments about something by who your friends are, and this becomes part of the sugi and chulin as to whether it's kosher, because Moshel makshiv al dvar sheker, kol mishatav rishaim, but that's the shayla, that's all of his friends, all the major, major issues that have to do with the entire way in which societies develop and in which we end up coming back to Geula. So it's not like a little side point of whether the Orvim are being Mechalkel. And of course the Orvim are the Remez, and this appears in many Midrashim, of those who do not care about their children. So types of Orvim very often will lay eggs in other birds' nests and let the children fend for themselves by basically being parasites on the parents, knocking off the children of the bird, you know, like the cuckoo, throws out all the eggs of the parents, and then the parents end up raising it from another species without realizing that it's not all types of biological tricks. But that's Orev type of stuff. So here is the Orev that doesn't care about its own, and the Orvim will be Mechalkel you. Now, there's some element here of a response to Eliyahu in this. In other words, if we understand it to say, look, HaKadosh Baruch Hu indeed did not apply the Lo Yiyeh Matar and was willing to tolerate this situation. Ad gelo ta'aretz. And Eliyahu is coming now to demand midas hadin against Bonav Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I never said it, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So if you have the guts to have no rachamim, so let the Orvim take care of you. Live off of Achav. Fine. You want to drink? You drink the way the rest of the people drink. And when the spring runs dry, then what are you going to do? Which is, of course, exactly what happens. So vayelech vayaskid v'adunai, vayelech vayeshev benachal kerit asher al pnei hayardein, v'horvim mivim lo lechem u'basar baboker, v'lechem u'basar ba'arev. So he's being well supported with fresh bread, meat, morning and night, u'min ha'nachal yishteh, drinking from the nachal, v'ahim iketz yamim, v'ivash ha'nachal. The nachal can't go on forever. It dried up as the rains dried. Kilo haya geshem baretz. So now he is, obviously there's always the option of the old miracle. So ye old miracle well could have just as easily taken care of Eliyahu Navi. For that matter, the Orvim could have started bringing him Coca-Cola along with the Basar V'lechem. I mean, might as well live in style. But instead what happens? Vayidavar Adonai Elav Lemor, Kum Lech Tzarfata Asher L'Tzidon. Now this is wild, because Tzidon, of course, is the main problem for Yisrael in this time. In the sense that Izebel, we're going to see Izebel is the, you know, Zebel Mountain. What do they call it today? That Har HaZebel? Yeah. So Izebel. That's her. So again, we won't say it in plain English, but we understand what it means. So she is the daughter of Tzur, essentially. She's the one who's bringing in, and we're going to see that she's extremely committed to the Avodah Zarah that she's gotten her husband involved in. And he's been told to leave so that he shouldn't be around Achav and Izebel. And Izebel openly threatens him later and says, you know, you may have support today, but we'll get you tomorrow. Don't worry. You're dead meat. So, to Eliyahu. So, she is his prime antagonist, it turns out. So, when he's sent to Tzarfat, which is between Tzur and Sidon, the city of Tzarfat, so it's up north in the area of Asher. We found B'nai Dan in the area. We found in the time of Hiram that Shlomo HaMelech brings somebody from that area, is from Naphtali. So, even though we had not successfully conquered the area, and Tzur was very powerful, there were plenty of the B'nai Aseret HaShvatim who were living in the area. So he now is exposing himself directly to her hometown area. He's even further north, so he's really stuck up there in a very dangerous and exposed way. And he goes to Tzarfat Asher L'Tzidon. He'll be there. V'yashavta sham, hine tziviti sham isha almana l'chalkalech. So now, you think that it's a small thing to turn the nation into a bunch of starving people. How about we throw you out there to the field? Let's see. Let's see how it feels. So you'll find now a poor widow. Okay. This poor widow, by the way, in Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, is actually the mother of Yonah. And, of course, the influence of Eliyahu HaNavi on that family was immense. We'll see now. Their whole life changes. And so he comes, vayokom vayelech tzarfata vayaveo petach ha'ir. He comes, and he has no idea who this Isha Almana is supposed to be. V'inei sham Isha Almana mekosheshet etzim. So he says, all right, you know what, I'll try the old Rivka trick to find. I mean, he didn't know who the right girl was. I don't know who the right girl was. So why don't I ask somebody to give me water? So vayikra elea, so he calls to her, and he says, k'china li matmayim bekli. Could you bring me some water? And I'll drink, Veshta. Now, at this point, she's supposed to say, yes, and there's plenty of things to feed it, but she doesn't. She goes to bring a little bit of water. So he says, this isn't going to work. So he shouts after her and says, I also need some bread. Now what? So could you bring me a little bread also? And she says, no way, bread. But Tomer, this is, I really, I mean, now I've seen everything. Chai Adonai Elohecha. Nim yesh li ma'og. What do you think, I've got a loaf of bread in the house? Ki melo chaf kemach bakar. All I have is a handful's worth of flour left in my little flour container. Uma'at shemen b'tzapachat. And I've got a little bit of oil in these portable little oil canteens. There's a nice picture, by the way, of one. Right there. So it's a flask. That's what I'm doing out here. Trying to pick up a little bit of sticks to heat up my oven for the last time. And this is it. We've got enough for our last meal. For me and my son. And then we eat, and then we die. That's it. He's found the woman, all right. And he has found the woman that he's going to test. Boy, is this a test. He says to her, Vayomer Eleha Eliyahu, Al Tiri, you have nothing to fear. Bui Asichi Dvarech, make your last meal, except feed it to me. Achasili Misham, Ugaktana Brishana, first, give some to me. Vodseit li v'lachu levinech ta'asi b'achrona. You make the meal for you and your son after you feed me. Kicho amar Adonai Elohi Yisrael. Kad hakemach lo tichla v'tzapachat Hashem en lo techesar. For so says Hashem, this little container of flour will never be empty. And this little flask of oil will never be lacking. Ad yom teit Adonai geshem al pnei ha'adama, until the time that the rains return. If you're ready to do that, then that will be, if you're not ready to do it, he's obviously making conditional. You're ready to accept it, give away the piece of bread that you make. Then this will be the result. Vatelech vata'ase kidvar Eliyo, she did what he said. Vatochal, he, vahu, you'll notice that it's inverted in the ktiv. It says in the ktiv, hu vehi. Because always, it was bishuto that she was eating. Right? So that lamaisa, it's he, vahu, but it's really his achila. Because it was all coming from him. And she lives like this, the whole household lives uveita yamim. Lives like this permanently. So every day, she's got this nisayon. Every day, there's just enough for survival. Like the man. There's no big bracha here. Beautiful. See what happens when we have David here? The man is kitzapich et advar. Beautiful. And every day, there's no bracha, there's just enough to survive. This goes on day after day. And she has to every day give first him and then herself. And be omedit that way. B'tzimtzum gomor. No bracha that we can see. And she lives on miracles. Karakebach lo chalata, v'tzapachat ha-shemesh, ha-shemen lo chaser, kidva Adonai asher diber b'yad Eliyahu. Exactly as Eliyahu said would be, this now becomes her life.
Maybe it's a red from the crucible like the man did for us, and she's
finished. Vayi achar ha-devarim ha-ela, chala ben ha-isha ba'alat ha-bayit, vayi chalyo chazak ma'od, now here, again, starts a new level of miracle that has many different aspects to it. One is the change we never heard before about an idea of Triyat HaMitim. Ever. Did you ever hear anybody hear of Triyat HaMitim? Not Triyat HaMitim in the future. Nobody talks about it. None of the Nevi'im talk about it. Nobody makes mention of it. To be Mechaye Mitim, who's Mechaye Mitim? To be mitpalel, Baruch Atah Hashem Mechaye Mitim, to bring it into the tefillah, that there should be mechayim etim, is learned from, according to the Gemara, this parsha. Because Elio is mitpalel for tchiyat ha-metim. Mikan, it's considered to be a tefillah. Otherwise, how can you be mitpalel for tchiyat? So until now, we didn't even know that such a thing is possible. It's not outrageous. So that's one level of it. It's introducing us to an entirely different appreciation of the nature of the incorporation of information in protoplasm. That's an extremely important change that becomes part of day-to-day tefillot for Klal Yisrael. Astonishing. This is its makor. But there's another element of it, of course. The other element of it is the way in which the Navi's moral position interrelates with Midat Hadin. And that's exactly what she says to him. Vatomer El Elio, she says to him, Mali Valachi Shalom, what the heck did I ever do to you to need you around here? Bata Elayla Skirat Avoni La Hamitat Bani. You have come here to destroy my life. That's the bottom line. Because as long as you weren't here, and this goes all the way back to Noach, this is the simple meaning of the Noach story, according to Rashi, so that the comparison of Noach to Avram is by definition in an ekshav leklum. Same thing is over here. Same thing is with Lot. Rashi is the same word. Nechshav leklum uses the same word here that he does in the introduction to Noach, and remarkably going back to the Makor of the Malchut of Sodom, where Lot says, I'm not going back to Avram. I'd rather die. If I'm around him, I am dead. And that's what she's saying. You know, before you came, I lived a moral life, a fine life, survived what I can. At least I wasn't dying. If everybody was dying of hunger, so I die with them. But it wasn't that my son got ill. Now, with you here, everything that's wrong with me is exposed through you. I can't live in your presence. Is that why you came here, to kill me? Is that what it's all about? Which, of course, is a direct attack on his entire approach to Achav. Until you came around and start shooting off your mouth about how terrible things are and there shouldn't be rain. And that's wonderful. Do you like what you've done? Because you're the one who did it. In the same way your demands for morality have destroyed my life, your demands for morality are killing thousands of people. I hope you're happy. So there's no greater attack on him directly from the street. Is this the time for morality, tell me? Or is this the time for survival? So what he has to do now is address both issues. In other words, if he can show that what is important is indeed the keeping of the mitzvahs of Hashem and Emunah, and that doesn't lead to destruction. The same thing happens, by the way, with Korach and the Ketoret. Everybody is saying, you see, the Ketoret kills people, the great Ketoret. Therefore, they needed to use the Ketoret to be Otzer the Magifa. So now, instead of saying, I am the murderer, let me show you that I, for the first time, am bringing an entirely different Hanhag in which death itself has no power. So that therefore, don't come to me and taina to me about your moral failings that destroy this country and destroy this Malchus. It isn't me. Because on the contrary, we can live daily, if need to be, on miracles. So he says to her, Vayomer Elea, Tenili et Banech, give me your son. Vayikacheu Micheka, Vayaaleu Ela Aliyah Sher Yoshev Sham, Vayashkiveu Amitato. He takes her. Takes him out of her hands, from her bosom, puts him on the bed where he was living, in the upstairs story. Vayikra el Adonai vayomar, Adonai Elohai, I can't believe you did this. Hagam el almana asher ani mitgorer ima, harei ota la'amit et bena. What am I exactly? A leper? But this is my purpose in life, that wherever I go, I destroy anything I touch. So you sent me to Chiyo Ben. Now here we see that he's blaming HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the situation. Not that he's the one, but that he was put into this position in order to be this. So I can't believe it. It's one thing that you send me to this Almana, and now her life has to be screwed up because of me. So anybody that I'm nice to has to be killed. Is that it? What am I supposed to be? How am I supposed to live? I mean, you see in this outburst of the Taina, it's exactly as our Levi himself says, exactly what Moshe said. This is the Lomariot, the same words. Right? So you want to be Meira. This, of course, goes back to the whole Pesel Micha issue, to all of the things that we saw back at the beginning from Yonatan, who said, there's ways to live with this. There's ways to work it out. So that this is now exactly the words of Moshe back in the beginning. You're now going to be Meira, because it doesn't quite fit me that Adin. So we shouldn't kotzim ani mechalem and akerem. So now another few hundred million kotzim, is that it? Let people die by the droves. It's amazing. There's a Gemara like this in Ta'anit, in which Rav Yehuda walks out and sees people being mezalzel in food. They're throwing around bread. So he says, seems to be a lot of plenty. And there comes a terrible famine, the rains stop, it's a disaster. And so what they need to do is get Rabbi Yehuda to see how bad things are. So what happens? They figure out an excuse to get Rabbi Yehuda outdoors. And he goes to the market, and he sees there's a riot going on. He says, what's going on? Somebody came with a little bit of produce, people are killing each other. Oh, he says, apparently there's hunger in the world? My, that's not good. Here, take off one of my shoes. We take off his shoe and it starts raining. It's already about to start. Yeah. This is exactly the story. Okay, so Elio, you know, you want to go back into the house? The orphan will take care of you. What you going to do when the well runs dry? Exactly. So now you're going to taste what it's like. We'll take you out now. Here you are out in the market with the almanah. You like it? Amazing. Exactly the sugya in Ta'anit. Astounding. Okay, so that's his first thing. This is terrible. This can't be. Vayitmodein ala yelet shalosh pa'amim. Now, this is not a tefillah for Tchiyat Amitim. This is the Yonah, the original Yonah, with the Orev, and this is the house of Yonah Anavi. Right? Yonah Matzabo Manoach, which is that Yonah, or was it that Yonah? It's an amazing story. So he didn't mix. That first tefillah was making it clear what the level of the relationship is here. He is searching for a solution to his problem. And indeed, according to Chazal, HaKadosh Baruch Hu here is saying to him, listen, there's three maftechot that are not given over to people. Now, you've been given over the rights to the Geshamim, and now you're a big shot. Now what are we going to do? The other one was the mafteach of Tchiyat HaMetim. Now you want the other one, is that it? I mean, so what's it going to be? You get two and I get one. Is that appropriate? You get two and I get one. How about you give me back that one, and then I give you this one? So that, in a sense, this moment was to make him aware of the fact that he can't be responsible for the Geshamim. He has to be the one that says, okay, so let me give that back to you. This is more important to me. So the personal level, suddenly, look at this amazing thing. Here he's ready to put the entire country into a matzav of kafna. No rain, year after year. But when it comes now to the almanah, that I need to go there. So there's a personal relationship. I give it back. And I learn from my persona this whole concept of rachamim, to be willing to ad kedei kach, recognize the ultimate rachmei HaKadosh Baruch Hu anabriya, to actually be mechayim etim. This is the reason, according to Woman the Omar, that we'll see that his gezerah on Tal, there's a machlokus in the Gemara, whether when he said Tal umatar, did the Tal stop? Because the Tal is never brought back. It only says the matar is brought back. So Woman the Omar says, well, there was no way to stop the Tal, because Tal can't be nifsak, the world can't be mitkayim. So those words were just bought. Only the matar. The other man, the Amar, says, no, the matar was, in fact, not the only thing. The tal was given. So where was the tal given back? Because tal shotchiyat hametim is the ultimate tal. So it's a marshal amad avadema. Somebody steals the medical bag of a doctor. Okay, so he takes it to his home, and his kid gets sick. So he takes the kid to the doctor. Doctor says, well, if only I had my medical bag, I might be able to do a proper examination. Okay, give me back the bag. So the same way, that once it's given back, now the whole thing, that's the talif, the whole thing now comes back, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu now brings his rachamim back on the world, but it has to come for the discovery of the Bishagamu Basar, essentially. He has to feel it in his flesh. So now it becomes, okay, the whole country I can handle, but the almana that I'm living with, it's an amazing pasuk. And now he starts praying for Tfiyat HaMetim. But first, he does his little medical thing. Vayitmoded al hayeled shalosh pa'amim. So he's doing resuscitation. It's as if it's not open Tfiyat HaMetim, which we see as the general approach. We'll see later on. Vayikra l'Adonai vayomar Adonai Elohai. Tashavna nefesh hayeled azel kirbo. Bring this child's life back into him. Vayishma Adonai b'kol Eliyahu v'toshev nefesh hayeled el kirbo v'yechi. The child lives. And this becomes now, im yomar lecha adam, she'en HaKadosh Baruch Hu mechayei metim. What do you mean? Vayishma Hashem b'kol Eliyahu. In the Medrash, how do we know that tefillah, tchiyat ha-metim, is called a tefillah, and therefore we can be koveyed b'tefillah? From this chutzpah of Eliyahu. So why shouldn't we be mitpelev for tchiyat ha-metim? That's the most astonishing thing, the bright of Pinchas ben Yoyer. Because he's giving you a tzurat avodah. The Torah, maybe l'day zirut, the zirut, maybe l'day zirut, and in the end we have now finally getting to the dargas of Yira and Kedusha and Ruach HaKedesh. Tchiyat ha-metim. What does that have to do with it? What do you mean, what does that have to do with it? Don't you want to be able to be mechayei metim? No, it doesn't matter, but don't you want to be able to be mechayei metim? Don't you understand what that means about your connection to life and your understanding of the nature of what life is? Of course you do. So the darg of tchiyat ha-metim that we're mitpalel on is not ultimate tchiyat ha-metim only. It's the, because otherwise you can't pray for it. Something that you have no connection to, there's no bakom for tefillah. It's not just a wish list. The mechayei metim means that I'm oimed bifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu in terms of my understanding the meaning of what tchiyat ha-metim is. Not some child's thing about the dead rising from their grave and so on and so forth, but the intimate depths of what we're talking about over here, the nature of what we view as specific life. That is the only way to be mitpalel on such a thing. So it's part of the darga that an Adam has to reach. Otherwise, what are you talking about? You're never talking about understanding life. That's the bottom line. If you can't talk about the Gata Meitim, you have no idea what life is. He takes hold of the child, comes down to the first story, down the ladder, hands him over to the mother. Vayomer Eliyahu Re'i. You know, you look at me as the bearer of death. Look, Chai B'Nes, your child lives. Vatomer Ha'ishar Eliyahu, Ata Zeyadati, Ki Ish Elohim Ata Udvar Adonai B'Pficha Emet. What do you mean? She always knew that he was a Navi. She's been living this way on miracles. What kind of crazy statement is this? Now I know. Now I know? If you didn't know before, so then how did you even listen to him? What right did you have to give away your food? Obviously, there must have been some hochacha that he had a chazaka manavi. Someone was made on him that he's definitely, you're allowed to do it. Otherwise, you listen. I can't give you my last food. So I'm only giving it to you because I'm relying that this is a mitzvah novi. You're allowed to violate our halacha. That's a rasha. Fine. So we'll do it. So how could she say this? The difference is dvar Hashem beficha emet. And this is exactly the Rabbeinu Tam's approach to Moshe Rabbeinu with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is Tosfos says, didn't Aaron and Miriam know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe v'ata po amodi madi? So what are they yelling at him? What do you mean? Why did you leave your wife? God told me to leave my wife. Yeah, they always say God told me. You know why? Because he did. But why does he? Because God always tells people what they want to hear. So if you are, this is the Rabbeinu Tam is approached by Moshe. So if you are the Navi of Hashem, so, I mean, the same way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does nothing, Ad Asher Yigaleh Sodo Al Avadav HaNeviim, it's also true the other way around. Aser Ritzono Kiritzon Chakadosh Yaser Ritzon Chakiritzono. So this is what you want, so God tells you to do it. Why not? I don't view that as being truth. I understand you have the powers and you decided to be a kanoi and knock off the whole country. That's what I thought until now. Now I see that it's not like that. It's that it's emet. But it's an underlying truth in what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants and wanted to be exposed to. And we'll see remarkably that Ahav believes because of this that he is in the right, that Elio is an absolutely vicious religious maniac who happens to have God's ear. What is the importance of having God's ear? He calls him an Ocher Yisrael, rotten man, who went out of his way to make Yisrael look bad. That's all you are. There's ways to deal with this. We have a Malchut. It's still Am Yisrael. It's still Eretz Yisrael. People can grow. What craziness is this to bring down the wrath of the Lord on us? What are you? A nut. But that's exactly, did he not see him? What do you mean? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not bringing rain. Everything is Al Pi Elio. And he is reduced to chasing after Elio all over the world. And he has the chutzpah to say, Ocher Yisrael. This is unbelievable because this hitmodedut, this face down is really a profound philosophical face down. It's not a question. Who has the power? It's not about power. It's about right and wrong. So that this introduction to the story of the Tchiyat HaBeitim of the Almana is central in understanding the position of Elio, which is very iffy. And indeed, we need to see the way this story continues and ends in order to see what the interrelationship was here of Elio and to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And what the elements that should have been reintroduced to the Malchut, which ones were essential and which ones are non-essential. And this becomes a very open question as the book continues. It's not in any way simplistic. You read this parak. Do you have a clear sense of what happened? Was he sent? Is he a maniac of some kind? What exactly happened? We still don't know. And this doesn't become, even at the end, we're left with a lot of hanging questions, as we'll see.